Hey, everyone. This is Chris Ryan from The Ringer. As many of you have heard by now, we lost a treasured colleague and friend over the weekend. Jonathan Charks passed away on Saturday. John was 34. He leaves behind a wife and a son, and we are obviously mourning his loss and sending all of our love to his family right now. If you go to theringer.com/Jonathan Charks, that's JonathanTjarks, you will find a memorial page for John, which has links to his GoFundMe that benefits his family and the amazing writing he did throughout his experience. I encourage you to go there. And if you can, please support the Charks family. Briefly, I will just say that John was among the first people that we hired to work for The Ringer. So he was instrumental in defining the voice and perspective of the site. He has as much to do with what this place is as anyone else. And throughout his experience with cancer, John communicated eloquently about the challenges he was facing, both through his writing and his podcasting. You could never stop John from talking about his passions. It's one of the things I loved about him. Over the last few months, you know, whenever we would talk, whenever I would reach out to see how he was doing, I would try to keep it very John-focused. And the next thing I knew, we would be talking about James Harden or Better Call Saul. He really loved this stuff. He loved talking about it, celebrating it, debating it, illuminating it. We're going to keep putting out our pods and writing while we grieve, but we wanted to let folks know that John was in our hearts and that his family was in our thoughts. Thanks for listening.
It's The Ringer's Philly Special presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else.
Welcome to the Ringer's Philly Special. Sheil Kapadia joined by Ben Solak. And will we ever do a post-game pod where we talk about a loss? I don't know. Who's to say? The Eagles are at this point where they're just boring us by dominating their opponents. We don't even have to pay attention in the fourth quarter. But you know what? They're 3-0. They're one of two 3-0 teams as we record this in the entire NFL. Benny Souls, how are you feeling, my friend?
Yeah, I don't know about you. Just even rewatching the second half was kind of like, okay, well, both of these teams know the outcome of the game. I know the outcome of the game. Just kind of go through the motions here. Let's get Teron Jackson some reps. A little Zach McPherson action in the fourth quarter. I miss the close games, the tight games. Yeah, he says, when 2 weeks ago I was positive the Lions were going to actually come back and win that game. And now I'm like, oh, I miss it. I miss feeling something in the fourth quarter.
Well, we said they looked like a Super Bowl contender after that win over the Vikings. And once again, they come out on the road, division opponent, jump all over them. You look at the three-game sample, they're third in the NFL in point differential. They're second in the NFL in expected points added. They're 3-0. Like I mentioned, this team is looking the part week in and week out. Ben and I are going to talk about it today. We'll go over some big takeaways. We'll dig a little deeper into the offense and the defense. On the post-game pod, Ben, it's kind of a little bit difficult to come up with a big picture takeaway. What do you got? Start us off.
Big picture takeaway. The Eagles are a second quarter team, all right? This is where you make your magic. First quarter, you walk out, you feel it out, right? You're throwing the jab a little bit, figuring out what the other guy's got, and then second quarter, you take over. The Eagles are averaging 21 2/3 points in the second quarter so far this year. The last year's average in second quarter scoring was the Titans at 9.5, baby. Where we just found a market inefficiency. It's just hammer the second quarter. No, I think you look at this game and you go, okay, there were a lot of ways, and we talked about this pre-Washington, that this would get weird, that they could build out a lead and then let Washington back into it. Like, it was a 6.5-point line, but, like, Washington had scored in spurts. They had scored over 20 points in each of the last 2 weeks. They did not, even coming into this week with all of the information we have about Carson Wentz as an individual, seem like a team that was just going to get, like there are some bad teams that just get beat by good teams for four quarters. You just sit on them. And then there's some bad teams that, like, have fight. They, like, have the ability to catch fire. They're a little bit more plucky. And Washington definitely seems like a second category team. And I think across the course of the year, they're not going to be good, but they're going to, like, be in games late with other mediocre teams and, like, score some big points, yeah, have some big plays. And the Eagles just sat on them for four quarters. And that is an awesome thing to see. Like, if you want to be legitimately considered as a good football team, step one is beat the bad teams. And don't let it be close. Don't let it be awkward. Don't mistake your way into letting them back in the game. Just beat the bad teams. Business, you know, top button, as usual. And the Eagles did that against Minnesota, which, like, arguably Minnesota's not even a bad team, though I think with this amount of data points, I'm pretty sure Minnesota's not that great. And then against Washington, they did it as well. I still really want to see the Eagles play a good team. There's a chance that's this upcoming Sunday, and that's kind of step two for are you a really good team, is what do you do against the good teams? But against the bad teams, the Eagles have handled business really, really cleanly in three consecutive weeks. And that's really good to see from a young team, young coaching staff. Top button, we do our jobs.
Yeah, we'll have a lot to say about the Jaguars later this week. Jaguars, one of the two teams ahead of the Eagles in point differential through 3 weeks. With that win today against the Chargers, they're a plus 46. And man, they really looked the part today. So that's going to be a fun matchup. But yeah, it goes back. I think Football Outsiders was probably, they were probably the first ones to kind of say this, that the great teams beat up on the bad teams. You beat up on the mediocre teams. And then, you know what? When you face the great teams, there's probably going to be some coin flip games in there. You're not going to win all of those. If you win a bunch of one score games, it doesn't mean you're a great team. It means some lucky stuff is probably going your way. And they come out in back-to-back weeks. And I mean, these games are not even close. I mean, I could have turned this game off at 2:30 Eastern time and focused on the other games in the NFL. And I would have been just fine. So here's one of my big takeaways, Ben, and I know you were saying the second quarter thing in jest, but I love how this team just kind of jumps on its opponents in the first half. And it might not be right away. It might not be the first possession. But if you look at just the first half differentials, they're kind of wild here through 3 weeks. And I do think part of it is the sign of a well-prepared, a well-coached team. So obviously today they punt twice and then they score 24 points in the second quarter. But do you know that the three top yardage performances league-wide in the first half this year, here's what they are: the Philadelphia Eagles in week two, the Philadelphia Eagles in week three, and the Philadelphia Eagles in week one. They have the top three yardage performances in the first half in the entire NFL. They had 322 yards of offense in the first half in this game. If you look at point differential in the first half, they're outscoring opponents by 51 points in the first half. That also is tops in the NFL. And then this one, I think, is crazy. They've outgained their opponents by 652 yards in the first half through 3 weeks. No other team is higher than 324 yards. They've doubled any other team if you just look at yard differential in the first half. Now listen, it's 3 weeks, there's noise, it's a small sample. If we're still saying they're doubling every other team in week 9 or 10, then yeah, we're absolutely looking at a Super Bowl team at that point. But I just think that's a good sign that they come out, like you said, they weren't sluggish. I mean, we're sort of spoiled. Like, they punted twice and you're thinking, man, oh, you know, this might be one of those ugly games. And
yeah, by the time, after two drives, I was like, they got to circle wagons ugly here on the sideline. Yeah. And they scored 24 points in the same quarter.
Yeah, but they know what they're doing. They get it together relatively quickly, and they do kind of have that stomp on the opponent's throat mentality. So I like that quite a bit. Other big obvious takeaway has to be the defensive line, right?
Yeah, that was cool.
I mean, that pass rush, unbelievable.
Yeah, they're super deep in the pass rush, and they have talented dudes. I think that through 3 weeks, it's safe to say that, like, they paid Hassan Reddick as if he's going to be a 10-sack guy, and just with the way that he's used plus the way that he gets his sacks, he's probably not going to be a 10-sack guy. But if he is a good part and, like, he's like a good role player for, like, the system, but then he's also a good part of a very deep rotation. It's going to be okay. Sweat looks awesome, man. Sweat looks so good. Sweat's first sack was like, it didn't feel, you don't watch and you're like, wow, like, incredible Von Miller. And especially because the Eagles then would subsequently have like what, 6 sacks in the first half. It doesn't stand out, but very few rushers in the league can finish that play with a sack. That rush usually becomes a pressure. You move the quarterback off a spot. You can't stop your momentum, get your angle, get your body that low into the ground, and then get to the quarterback. Like even with a quarterback like Wentz, it's a big, tall dude. He's still moving in the pocket. Like that is very, very difficult to do. So Sweat's ability to finish the rush were great. And then Brandon Graham just ate Sam Cosby's lunch. The
Brandon
right
tackle. Graham, my God.
2.5 sacks.
He's have halfway, some mercy, BG.
He's halfway to a season sack total after 3 weeks, baby. Just Brandon Graham. You're going to finish with 7.5 sacks every single year. It's going to be great. But that's the depth, right? That's what that gets you is the ability to get fresh horses in there for 4 quarters. I think more importantly than the work you got off the edge was the work you got on the interior, right? After week one, it was kind of like, okay, Fletch and Javon, like, what was that? That was a really poor performance against the Lions who, you know, we're coming into greater clarity with just how good that Lions interior is. That Lions interior offensive line seems really good through 3 weeks. But Hargrave and Fletch both more successful rushers, more disruptive upfield, better against the run. And the way they're being used, neither one of them is spending nearly as much time inside of the guards as they were in that week one game, right? You see Jordan Davis there a lot more now, and then you see Fletch and Hargrave out kind of at the three tech. They're outside of the guards. And that's where both of them are going to be stronger, as penetration players. That's where those splash plays are going to come from. So defensive line did a wonderful job with the one deep, with the starters. Everybody was eating. It was great, but it's also the two deep. It's the ability to get the other guys on the field. More quality Marlon Tuipulotu reps, sure. Patrick Johnson's become an important role player for the Eagles. Fine. Like, it's crazy. They Howie's always believed in having horses there, and they do.
Hargrave and Cox, I thought, in week two, I thought the film was pretty good on both of them as well. So this is after, you know, I think they were both, like you said, disappointing in week one. They played well here. I'm looking forward to seeing the Jordan Davis film. He at least had a couple flash plays in this game that you could see watching live. I mean, that was the first play of the game where he burst.
It was second play of the game. He had the pass.
Second play. Okay.
The beginning of the second drive of the game. They had two plays in a row with Davis at the nose and just dominated the interior.
Yeah.
And then there were mistakes elsewhere by players I will not name who led to them like the runs being positive runs. But like it's such clear proof of concept where just Davis over the center, let him go eat. And then he got too excited on the field goal block. He was really pumped to be on field goal block. And that's just such a rookie thing to do. Right? Here we go. Like, you actually can't hit that guy. That's
You're not allowed to do that. Yeah. Brandon Graham was just unbelievable in this game. I mean, you mentioned it, but he was everywhere. Like, I just felt like they were showing a constant replay for 3 hours of Brandon Graham whooping Cosby and just either being the one to finish the play or being a part of the pass rush. So that was great. You mentioned it. Reddick, Fletcher Cox, Hargrave, Jordan Davis. I mean, they dominated this game. 9 sacks, most sacks since 2019, I have
in
written.
A single
here.
Game?
Is that right? That might be wrong because I think they had 10. 10 against the that was the Jets game. Yeah, there was a Jets game.
I remember that Jets game.
Yeah. So they had 10 in that game. So that's right. 9 is the most since that game. Third most sacks by an Eagles team in the last 20 years. That one surprised me a little bit. So, and I just was looking up the stats, True Media and PFF. 7 of the 9 sacks came with a 4-man pass rush. So all know that's the preferred way to do it. If you can rush with 4 and get to the quarterback that way, you can do it. If you can't do it, that's where we feel like you have to adjust. But today, they absolutely were able to do that. I think they blitzed at around the same percentage they did last week. So they still, it was even late in the game. I think they were like, all right, we're sick of this dunk. You're going to pad the stats. We're going to come after you kind of like a Wink Martindale in a preseason game or something.
Yeah, and there was a little bit of like, let's hide some tendencies in that as well, right? It's like when the Eagles have Kaiser White on the field, they tend to just drop in a zone. They tend to not blitz. All of a sudden on the last drive, Kaiser White's on the field and they're sending blitzes. That's a, we don't want the next guys to know what we do when Kaiser White's on the field sort of a thing. So we're going to make you actually watch the film instead of just tapping in numbers and being like, oh, Kaiser is on the field. He's dropping into coverage. You know what I mean? So you have some of that tendency hiding stuff. But also the defense very much knew they were pitching a shutout there in the second half. And knew who the opposing quarterback was and felt strongly about retaining the shutout. And that's why it kind of stunk that the Eagles took that safety when they did. Because then, like, they're still trying to hold on to the shutout in that final drive that ends up being score for the Washington. But it doesn't feel the same because it doesn't say 0 on the board. It says 2. But man, like after the Jordan Davis penalty wipes off that field goal and the Washington football team finds themselves in goal to go pretty quickly, Cats are flying to the ball, man. You would have thought it was 24-24 the way that defense was flying on the goal line. They wanted that zero to stay there. It was cool to see.
And as we know, I'm team CTC, cash them checks. So that's a good time to make that box score look good, pad the stats a little bit. Contract time comes around. They don't say, hey, you got these tackles, you got these QB hits when you were up 24-2 in the fourth quarter. No, that doesn't matter. You look at those totals, and those absolutely matter. Do you have any more big picture takeaways? I have one more.
I think the big thing that has to be talked about now that we've seen it for 2 weeks is the second half production. I think that that's the other side of the coin of our jokes about the second quarter and how the Eagles keep jumping out to these two score leads, these three score leads, right? They've walked into every single halftime locker room with at least a two possession lead. And so the second half scoring, now that they scored 14 points in the Detroit game, and then since then they haven't scored in the second half, that warrants a conversation, even if it's super noisy. I think what you have to look at there is you actually have to look at the scoring in totality and just realize that like the way the Eagles score the football is a little bit volatile. They were extremely reliant on high explosive plays in this game. That's not a bad thing. It's not bad to be like, we live on explosives, because it gives you the ability to score fast, which is great. But what you see is like, okay, it's a second and 10, we go AJ Brown shot play one-on-one, 40-yard gain, boom, we're in scoring territory. We're, you know, two-minute drill, Devontae Smith deep post, insane Devontae Smith dunk catch above the rim, unbelievable elevation, crazy talent, boom, we're inside the 10. And then you get like, you know, third and 19 in the start of the third quarter, and they go Devontae Smith jump ball on the sideline, and they don't connect on that one. And it's like, yeah, it's, you know, it's third and 19, you're trying to just throw it up there and whatever. But it's when you're going to live on these downfield contested one-on-one shots, which is not the wrong thing to live on. It's not bad. It's just when you do, your scoring is going to come in bursts, right? It's going to be, you're not like inching your way down the field methodical one after the other. It's not like 2017 Rams or like 2019 Chiefs, where it's just like, this offense cannot be stopped. It never stops. It just scores and scores and scores. It's going to be, all right, we will score a lot. Our scoring drives will be fast, but they're going to be a little bit intermittent because we're so reliant on just these huge chunks to move us down the field. Then boom, all of a sudden we take a penalty and we're kind of like the wind stuck in our sails. The Eagles aren't a good like standard drop back passing team right now. It's not like, woohoo, third and six, like the Eagles, you know, it's more like first and 10 play action shots, right? Like second and 10 screens. They're just like finding these huge chunks. And so in one game, it'll be the second quarter. In another game, it'll be like two drives in the third quarter. They're still going to put up a lot of points. It's just there's going to be these ebbs and flows when you live on explosives like this.
See, I watched it and I was not concerned at all with the second half. Maybe it'll be a good, we'll watch the film and have that conversation more later this week. But I felt like they could, you know, in either of these games, if they needed to score 35 or 40 and they needed to keep their foot on the gas and the other team was scoring points, that they would have been able to do that. And even the point you made, yes, yeah, in this game, they had a lot of explosive plays, but they have, you're right about, you know, that they're not a standard traditional drop back passing game, but they have strung together, methodically strung together drives where they can put together 9, 10, 11 play drives where they're picking up a bunch of first downs and taking off. Even in last week's game, they had a drive in the second half. I think they ran 6:34 off the clock and we're just kind of moving the chains. So I feel like that the strength of this team right now is that they can actually do multiple things. They can have a game like this where they had five plays of 30 plus yards. And it was what we were talking about last week where I said, I hate the coaches and the offense. Oh, we got behind the sticks on third down. We had to curl up. We couldn't score any points because we faced 3rd and 9. You know what the good offenses do? They get in those situations, they overcome a holding penalty and they still convert. And that's really what they're doing. So I feel like they can string together those drives. And at the same time, they can hit you with those explosives as well. So
no, it's not that it's bad. Like that's not like a bad thing. It's not like that's a concerning thing. It's to say that like, yeah, the Eagles scored 24 points in the second quarter and then no points in the second half. The way they were putting up points in this game, they could have very easily scored like 14 in the second quarter and 10 in the third quarter if they'd only had 14 on the board, right? They just like, all right, we're just gonna keep shooting. We're just gonna keep shooting. Like we're just ripping off explosives. It's okay if like your first and 10 play call is going to be play action, three dudes into the concept, all of them 30 yards down the field,
you're living in a world where it's either we're going to score or we're going to go three and out, right? Like, we're going to put ourselves behind the sticks. Not bad. Good. Good. The right way to play with Jalen Hurts. An awesome way to play. It's also telling opposing defenses, you want to play one-on-one? A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, are you sure? Like, we have really, really good pass-catching weapons. So it's right. It's just that's going to lead to weird scoring breaks, right? It's going to lead to, like the Eagles are the best second quarter scoring team in the league. Does that mean anything? Not really. It just means they're a very explosive offense. So when they score, it's fast. It's right now. It's on top of you. And then when they don't score, it's like, all right, oftentimes we took a huge shot. We didn't get it. Now we're in second and 12. And, like, not a lot of teams score out of second and 12.
Yeah, it'll be fun to see if they, well, maybe not for all the listeners, but if they get behind in one of these games and have to, now the defense knows you kind of have to score quickly if it will look a little bit different. All right, my last big takeaway, just Devontae Smith saying, hey, don't forget about me, guys. Mm-hmm. If I were, you know, I was thinking, like, if he were on the, you know, one of like a really good offense last year as a rookie, you know, like if he was on the Chiefs or the Bucks or something. I mean, what, 100 catches for like 1,200 yards he easily could have had, I think. And in this game, I mean, these were highlight level plays, 8 catches for 169 yards, most yards by an Eagle since 2014. I feel like we just come on the post-game pods and are just announcing that they're breaking these franchise records or, hey, first right. time they've done this in this many years, which is always a good sign. But that 45-yard catch, what do you think? The foot probably wasn't in, or did you feel like it was borderline? The one that Ron Rivera was late throwing the flag there.
It was not a catch. Okay. However, what's more important? That it's a catch or that it's not? Or that one coaching staff is prepared for a shaky call and the other coaching staff isn't, right?
Great point.
Like that's like, okay, probably wasn't a catch. Shout out Sirianni knowing the business and shout out Ron Rivera not knowing the business, right?
Yeah.
Like anytime you get one of those, you don't even spend a moment looking at, oh, I wonder what it says. You just go, okay, run a play. And they ran what play? Gun, zone, RPO, slant, flat, curl, flat. The same. They run it 9 times a game.
40 times a game.
Yeah, it's like, hey, we can run this out of any personnel. It's a one-word play call. Get to the freaking line. Like, you don't check. You just go. And meanwhile, Ron's like walking 2 yards out onto the field and drops the flag in front of his toes. Come on, Ron. Been in the league for a while. Scream at the side judge and beat it at him.
It's a great point. I mean, I was just thinking of the Rivera aspect of it being like, dude, what are you doing? But you're right. It is good to contrast the two. The Eagles knew exactly what to do. Hey, we don't know if he got in, or we know that he didn't get in. Get your butt up there. And sometimes teams do that. You know, how many times do we see teams try to do that? And then the flag gets in there right before. Like I want to go back and count the number of seconds that passed. It felt like they moved really quickly where all of a sudden they're up, they snap the ball, and then Ron is taking his sweet old time.
Yeah, Ron's ambling.
He's just chilling, finding that flag. He's like, listen, we are the Washington Commanders. We got a lot bigger problems than whether I need to challenge this call or not. So yeah, it was a great effort by Devontae Smith, catch or no catch, which it probably shouldn't have been a catch. But then he had a 31-yarder where they beat the blitz. I think it was a crosser. He had a catch and run there. And then, like you mentioned, that 44-yarder. I mean, that was beautiful. Leaping grab in between two defenders downfield. And then not only that.
Elevation, man.
Oh, my gosh. Beautiful.
He can get up.
Yeah. Yeah. That was fantastic. And then they come back to him. Contested catch on fourth down. The same drive, same possession. I mean, that was a big drive right before the half. And you could just tell he was feeling it. He was flexing after that. And to have those two guys as your wide receivers and have the ability to just pick your one-on-one matchup in high leverage situations. And it's only 3 games and it feels like they come through like every single time they go to them. That was my other big takeaway, which is Devontae Smith being like, yo, I'm still like up there with any of these second year guys right now.
Yeah. Extremely big deal for the Eagles to have the struggles in their red zone running game, their short yardage red zone game that they typically do not have. And then on third down and fourth downs go, okay, where's AJ? Where's Devontae? And get rewarded on that, because it's a great lesson for Hurts and for the coaching staff that it's like, all right, we can start to enter a space in the red zone where it's not like, all right, we got the ball inside the 10. Let's run the football. Like, this is what we do. And like, I tend to want them to be that way. They tend to want to be that way. They're better when they're that way. It's good that that's their like primary avenue. But then to discover like, oh, we can get to our third downs. And like, they saw, okay, we got off man cover. We're throwing the 3rd-and-8 slant to AJ Brown. This route's not going to be past the sticks. So it's,
we're just going to put it on him and expect him to not only make the catch and beat the guy at the line, but then carry the dude past the yard line to gain and potentially into the end zone. Huge. Your fourth down, obviously, like you're in a passing situation because the clock is running, everything like that. But to be able to say, okay, well, we can put Devontae in the slot. And if we get him on a nickel corner, we get him on a safety. This guy's so good contested catch. We just feel good about throwing it up to our 170 pounder like that. It's a huge luxury in terms of your yes. red zone play calling stuff. I'm a little bit touchy right now around the Eagles short yardage and goal line stuff. They've not been really good.
Yeah.
Inside the five, and like when they're inside the 20 in short yardage situations, like they had the fourth and one Zach Pascal handoff, which is just like a pet peeve play of mine. I hate that play. But they like, you know, they had to score on a fourth and goal against the Vikings, right? They've kind of been really good on fourth and goal scoring seven, which hides the fact that they've not been really good on first, second, and third and goal. So it's something to be a little bit privy to. But if you have ball winners like this, you feel okay. You know, like you kind of have that safety net where it's like, all right, just find 11, find six, which matchup you like better, put the ball in the air, and you expect your guys to win.
Yeah, let's take a little break here, and then let's dig a little deeper into some of those things you mentioned on the offense, and then we'll switch over, talk a little bit more about the defense.
This episode is brought to you by Major League Baseball. A lot is going on in the world of sports right now, but don't forget the 2024 baseball season. It's officially here. Some pretty exciting things to look forward to. Can the star-studded Dodgers, can they make the World Series? Can Mookie Betts break my heart again? How about the young Orioles? How about the defending champs, the Rangers, trying to become the first back-to-back champs in over two decades? See how far they'll go. Get in on the action by visiting your local ballpark or any ballpark, or you can just go to MLB.com, tap the banner to learn more. Baseball is something else. This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower What's Next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The less your business spends, the more margin of money you have. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone, but actually doing it, that's easier said than done because the cost of everything is going up these days. So do the smart thing. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth so you can easily reduce costs and headaches. NetSuite specifically helps by reducing IT costs since it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, and cutting the costs of maintaining multiple systems since everything you need is on one suite. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See for yourself how effective NetSuite can be and try it out today. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That is netsuite.com/ringer.
All right, yeah, I think what you said is true. It's sort of under the radar. The run game has not been as crisp. Now, they haven't, you know, needed it altogether today. 30 runs for 72 yards. Their longest run was 13 yards. And you're right. I mean, we always talk about stuff that's going to regress or what's sustainable, what's not. Scoring touchdowns on fourth and goal all the time is probably not going to be sustainable. So those are some things that I think are worth digging a little bit deeper into. The offense final numbers, 400 yards of offense, 21 first downs. I mean, I looked at Hurts' numbers at the end of this. Like, I watched Hurts during the game and I was like, yeah, Hurts was, you know, pretty good. I wasn't like this. I wasn't like last week, let's put it that way, where I was like, oh my gosh, this is the best game I've ever seen him play. I'm like, yeah, I think he played pretty well, did what he needed to do. And then you look at the box score, 22 for 35 for 340 yards and three touchdowns. And it felt like he didn't even play that great. And, and that speaks to some of the chunk plays you mentioned. Three plays of 40 plus, five plays of 30 plus, six plays of 20 plus yards. And it also speaks to what you said about getting out of jams. I mean, I don't know. Did you that A.J. Brown slant for the touchdown? They were communicating before the snap, you know, what route's he going to run. I almost felt like Brown was a catcher, like shaking him off. Like, I swear, I have to rewatch. I swear I saw him be like, no, like, don't change to that. Let me run the slant. Right. I don't know if they were asked about that after the game. Did you, I don't know.
I don't know. I was trying to see if I could find an example of another quarterback giving that juggle signal and see if I could riddle out what exactly it ends up being.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, it's a two-man thing, right? Like, Devontae never looks for the ball and is basically he's in the slot. AJ's outside. Devontae's essentially running at a dude to clear him out. He's going to make sure that the safety can't come down and get involved in this play. AJ's going to be able to get inside of the corner, but that safety's not going to be able to come down and hit AJ, right? Because Devontae's going to run right at him and be like, you have to respect me. You have to respect the potential of them throwing the football at me. So whatever it is, it's two-man, and it's designed for the outside receiver. What the juggle motion is, I don't know, and what the process of communicating was, I don't know. That's where you need like kind of the All-22 to do it. You don't try to piece it together through the TV copy as best you can. But yeah, that descriptor is really, really accurate. Like Jalen Hurts was 22 for 35 for 340, three touchdowns. And it didn't, like, it didn't feel like an elite quarterback passing game, right?
Right.
Which to me is a testament to the skill position players, right? Like it was an unbelievable AJ game, an unbelievable Devontae game. Dallas Goedert had the touchdown on the screen, which Eagles screen game redemption, baby. Nice, good little
great
inside
call.
The 30 yard line screen. We finally got one. Those are your guys. And then you have your, like, you know, your DPIs to Quez Watkins. You have your Grant Calcaterra play action. They were in a really weird formation first play out of halftime. That was such a, like, we drew this up on the board 2 minutes ago because we know we're going to get this sort of a play. And then they just throw it out there on the first play of the third quarter and pick up 40. Like, it's a testament to your skill position, guys. And then to that point, it's a testament to Shane Steichen, who we haven't really talked about too much through three games.
Yeah, but that's true. You're right.
Young man Shane's calling himself a little football. The Eagles run, I cannot stress this enough, way fewer passing concepts. Who runs into routes where and how the routes interact with each other than other teams. They just run them really well. They get to them from a variety of formations, and the quarterback understands them and likes them. They know what Hurts likes. They know what their guys can do, and they know what buttons to press. All right, we have off cover. We have zone. We're going to get a blitz. They have simple stuff. And it's still like a little bit scary in terms of like playoff defenses and extra time to prepare and whatever. But for right now, it's really impressive that we have bread and butter concepts and we have better football players than you. Stop us if you like.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. We probably, and I personally, I don't think I've given Shane Steichen any credit. He absolutely does deserve credit. I mean, there are situations where they don't overthink it. They know who their most talented players are. They get those players the ball. Now, the one I will crush everyone for is the one you mentioned. I mean, the Jet, come on. All these guys we mentioned, and you're giving me a jet sweep to Zach Pascal on fourth down. Let's rip that out. You know, we don't need to get too cute with that one. You have a quarterback who can run the football as well. So
The other thing about it that's so annoying is they just didn't get under center for the whole game. And then they got under center for that play. And it's like, guys, Washington's going to know something's up. This is the only snap under center we've basically played the whole game. The Eagles are a complete total gun team. They do not.
Or pistol, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, gun. And right, that was going to bring up. They don't go under center. And the reason is because when they go to get into that world of like running outside zone, they go to pistol, which is cool and good and appropriate for the offense. Yeah. But it's like, all right. Fourth and goal, we're putting him under center. It's like, all right, it's one of three things then. Like, you gotta, if you're not gonna ever be under center, you need a little something a little bit better than that for your little fourth and one gadget play.
Yeah, that one was absolutely a head scratcher. But when you're dominating opponents and winning by double digits, then no one will talk about it. That's one of those where if you lose a field goal game, I mean, we were probably leading the show with the Zach Pascal jet sweep on fourth down. But that's how it goes. You're allowed some misses if you have a lot of hits there. All right, what else did I have here for the offense? I think we covered most of the stuff I wanted to say. I just wrote down a few notes on like their last five drives. Like you mentioned, they had four first downs in the second half, four punts and a safety. I think you mentioned the one play where Hurts kind of underthrows Devontae Smith. Could have been a DPI, but I thought he had him there, where if it's a better throw, that's going to be a big play. I think I'm on board with your Kenny Gainwell. I think you were ahead of the curve on that. A third and three, Kenny Gainwell, 1 yard. I mean, I don't know if I need that in my every week.
Always.
So then that set up a fourth and two. Like that scenario could definitely play out differently if it's a spot where you really need it. They obviously got the safety. So we'll look a little bit more at the film. I do want to look at the run game a little bit, because watching live, I wasn't like, ooh, this run game stinks. Because right after the blown run, it's an amazing Devontae Smith or AJ Brown catch. So you don't really notice it. But I think that's worth looking at with the film this week and seeing.
Yeah, I gave Landon Dickerson feathers through 2 weeks, and then it turns out he just hadn't played John Allen and Daron Payne yet. It was okay. It was a fine game for Dickerson, but, you know.
And he was a little banged up today, right? Like, he was playing a little injured. So we'll see. Okay. Anything else with the offense that you wanted to bring up?
Made fun of Pascal. You got your Kenny Gainwell one in.
No, I shouted out the screen. Yeah, we're loving it.
Yeah, okay, we're loving it. All right, defense, Johnny Gans, 2 weeks in a row. Now, this one felt more like an individual player just kind of crushing their opponents. But hey, if you're not overthinking it as a head coach, as a play caller, then I still give you credit for that. So the defensive line dominated. The Washington didn't score on their first 11 possessions. I mean, looking at their final drives, it's a joke. I think they almost had as many first downs as the Eagles if you just look at the final box score. But their first nine drives, five first downs, eight punts, and a fumble. So as I wrote in my notes, final stats are garbanzo beans, so misleading. So yeah, that's I think that's what I already
said. Do you
said
write
there.
Garbanzo beans physically in your notes?
Yeah, it's right here. Final stats are garbanzo beans. Because now some, you know, I need to bring some of my Birds with Friends vernacular to the Ringers Philly special, because it's hard to know. Because I mean, listen, you had an audience, so you're bringing in a segment of the audience who's probably like, you know, who is this handsome bald Indian man yelling garbanzo beans at me, and what is he talking about? So I can explain some of those things if I have new listeners, but then of course I have listeners in the past who are probably like, man, Shield's a fraud, you know, he changed, but now he's not even talking about garbanzo beans anymore. Before that, you used to say that every other sentence. So I got to find that happy medium. We're only in week three of the season. I mean, it's a slow build, but I actually did write that down in my notes here.
I'm impressed that you write full sentences in your notes. My notes are just like, you know, like I have down like Pascal short yardage play, Goddard screen TD. I like my second quarter note, it literally reads 2Q 21.667 a lot.
Well, let's take listeners behind the scenes. I don't know if anyone cares about this, but I'm curious. What is your process on Sunday of getting ready for the show? Because I thought it was really fun last Monday. We were just like, all right, Monday night is the only game on. We'll watch it and we'll hop on right afterwards. Mm-hmm. But Sunday, it's trickier because we have other responsibilities. We're trying to keep an eye on the entire league. But at the same time, this is a reaction show. So I'm plugged into the Eagles more on game day than I have been probably since the 2018 season. Like, that's the one game I'm focused on at 1 p.m. I'm taking notes. And then today what I did was, at the start of the 4 o'clock games, I just said, you know what? I'm going to do my prep for the show now. That way I can watch like the second half of all the late window games. Cause I didn't do that in week one. I waited until, you know, seven, and then I'm missing the end of the 4 o'clock games. And I didn't like that process. So what are you doing? You seem like you would be more efficient at this than me.
I watch the games. I write down no physical notes. I rewatch the game on the condensed game through NFL Plus.
Oh,
I write down
okay.
No physical notes. And then I get on the podcast, and then if I know I need to reference something, like, you know, like, oh, I'm going to bring up the Zach Pascal fourth down attempted run, I make sure I write down Pascal fourth down attempted run so that it's up in the event that I forget about it. But like, I don't write like Joshua 2.5 sacks bend on the first half sack. I don't write like, you know, AJ Brown vertical. You watch the game and then you watch the game again, trying to figure out what you're going to talk about. And then you talk about it.
See, listen, you're seeing the difference between a brain in his mid-20s and a brain that's approaching 40. I mean, my memory, even though my mom will tell you, eat those almonds, it'll help your memory. That's my mom's big thing. So maybe I got to, do you eat almonds?
Yeah, I like trail mix. I don't really intentionally hammer the almonds.
I've asked you a lot of weird questions over a month, but that one I felt like especially caught you off guard. Why is this man
well,
asking
because,
me?
Because like, you'd already told that your mom stories, I already like, got it, whatever. And then all of a sudden you're like, are you eating your almonds? I was like, you're doing the your mom thing to me right now. You're just passing it down the generation.
That is true. So, okay. All right. See, I need to have some sort of structure, some notes, or I'll just forget everything. I'll be referencing guys who aren't even on the team anymore. So I guess that is the difference there. I couldn't tell a lot. I mean, I don't know what the Eagles were doing on the back end. Quite honestly, I think some of those were coverage sacks. Some of them, they were just getting to him right away. And like he had no chance at it. I mean, that'll be something else to look at this week. Did you have any takeaways with their secondary, how those guys plays or what they were asked to do?
No. So it was as we expected, given what they've kind of learned through the first couple of weeks. Early down, five-man front, Davis in the middle, Hargrave and Fletch outside of the guards, and then some amalgamation of your outside guys, Reddick, Sweat, Brandon Graham, Patrick Johnson, depending on do you want to look like you're dropping, do you want to look like you're rushing on the outside on early downs. They did it a first down, they did it second and six, whatever. And then once the second they get to a pass down, like a rush down for the defense, we're going to rush with four. Davis off the field, four guys down. They would occasionally put Edwards over that nose
And so it would make it look like a five down front, but it's Edwards instead of Davis there. And that's just a passing down look just to say like, hey, we might blitz. And then usually he's dropping a lot of zone. They didn't man up if they didn't have to. They looked like they were running a ton of match stuff because you brought up coverage sacks. That first Brandon Graham sack went to the ball for like 4 seconds. And it was like, you know, bunch to this side, motion a dude over, back release out of the backfield. It's like a total, you're trying to man that up. You have guys crossing all over each other, guys bumped into each other, and the Eagles just passing it off. No problem. Really, really well done on that sack. So that was like clear match stuff. But for a
let's explain that a little bit more match stuff. Let me give you my, you know, sort of elementary understanding, and you can tell me if this is correct or if there's more to add to it. So match means you're not lined up across the guy and saying, this is my guy. If they're in a bunch, if they're in a stack, you let the routes start to distribute, and then you pick up the guy in man coverage depending on where those routes distribute. Is that the basic concept of what you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Like a lot of, like knowing the ins and outs of match coverage is largely useless. There's just no reason to like talk about it. But for the interest of like an Eagles fan watching and caring about what Jonathan Gannon's doing, Gannon wants to match routes post snap, right? So in man coverage, I have that guy and I decide that pre-snap. I've got 11. Wherever 11 goes, I'm going. If 11 motions, I'm following him. In match coverage, it's I'm going to cover the man who releases into this area, who releases according to these rules. So the individual I end up covering may be determined post-snap, but my rules are determined pre-snap. In order to exist in that world, you need a couple of things. One is very versatile players. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, Hassan Reddick, Kaiser White. I need bodies on the field who, if they get stuck on a tight end, they'll be okay. If they get stuck on a slot receiver, they'll be okay. That's Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I need a guy who, if he gets stuck on a running back, he'll be okay. And a tight end, he'll be okay. That's Kaiser White, right? Because since we're matching after distribution, we're matching after the routes are run, I might end up covering Antonio Gibson on one play and then Logan Thomas on another play. And I have to be able to exist kind of in that spectrum. So number one, you need versatile players. Number two, you need really good communication. You want your guys to be healthy. You want them to stay on the field. You want them to play a lot together. You will notice that in those late drives, Zach McPherson's on the field, right? And you're taking Darius Slay off the field a little bit. But Chauncey Gardner-Johnson's still out there because Chauncey needs reps, right? Chauncey was late to the team like we've been talking about. So we're leaving Chauncey on the field. Just practice calling stuff. Practice communicating stuff. Like, let's just continue to get these live reps as we're seeing them. So you need versatile players. You need good communication. And then you need really, really good film study and prep. So like I having not seen the All-22 of that particular Brandon Graham sack, I can't tell you exactly what Washington's running, but Washington like runs the dagger concept 95 bajillion times a game. So you're going to say, okay, we're going to run our match quarters, this, whatever we call it, because we want to match dagger. We know they like that. So let's make sure we have that repped out. So you need really good prep throughout the week. And that's where like, if Gannon's going to be legit as a play caller, it's going to be with a lot of that like Monday to Saturday stuff where it's, okay, we could man up. We can just like line up across, but we can also get our guys into advantageous looks if we really feel like we know what the opposing team's dialing up. And I would bear that once we watch this film, it's going to look that way where you're just going to see Eagles receivers just sitting, waiting for this route to break, Eagles defensive backs just waiting for this route to break, waiting for that route to break because they kind of know what Washington's dialing up.
Yeah, I think that's what it looked like watching live for sure. I thought Wentz, you know, we mentioned it last week that it's like get to him early, rattle him a little bit early, which is exactly what they did. And then I think it absolutely affected him. He missed some layups. He was uncomfortable. He was sailing balls out of bounds. He had no feel in the pocket. He runs into his own offensive lineman. So that was kind of the Wentz you probably expected to see if you could put some pressure on him early.
Eagles fans who have not watched Washington this year, Wentz has looked better than that. Like he's like, at times this year, been like, maybe get hang around a little bit. But that was absolutely the Wednesday Eagles fans wanted to see. And we got to see him for four quarters.
Yeah, I would say he's looked exactly like that, but usually for like 50% of the game, not 100%. Right, yeah. Like, you know, when the game is still competitive, he's then had a possession or two where you say, okay, he's making some nice throws and getting them back in this. But yeah, he still is always going to have those moments. And to be fair, you know, at least a little bit to him in this game, their offensive line was not good. I wanted to shout out Avante Maddox. I thought, again, he had a very good game. I mean, that goal line stop on the shovel pass, I know the game's out of hand by then, but that was a fantastic play. He had another pass breakup in man coverage. I thought he played well last week also. I thought he played well last year. So this is somebody who you extended last year. you wanted to see. All right, are you going to get, I thought it was a bit of a rich contract for a slot corner. Not that slot corner's not important, but just when you look at the market, I think he's making what, over $7 million per year, which is like, all right, you better be a legit top tier slot corner for that money. And he's been that over the last two games here. So defense, sixth in EPA per drive through 3 weeks, have allowed two touchdowns in the last two games. And I think what you mentioned is true. This isn't last year. You know, I crushed him last year for padding stats against the Garrett Gilberts and the right. Ian Books and, you know, these guys who are not in the league. I mean, whatever you think about Carson Wentz and Kirk Cousins, like, most likely those guys will finish among the top 20 starters in the NFL by the end of the season statistically. So these are more mediocre offenses. And listen, last year you went up against mediocre quarterbacks like Derek Carr and you looked like you couldn't get a single stop
exactly.
the entire game. So I do think it matters and I do want to make sure I'm giving them credit for that. Anything else on the defense?
No, I agree. Maddox playing well, and that's important because I really hope this Darius Slay back thing is not a lingering thing, but as a man over 30 can attest, back things tend to linger. I feel like those hang around.
Why do you think I'm standing? I started doing these podcasts standing. I can't be sitting in a chair for 12 hours a day. Yeah, this feels much
better. You're in a position with Slay. We talked about this preseason. One of the big concerns with Eagles is that corner is really thin. Slay, yes. Bradbury, Maddox, sick. Corner four is Zach McPherson. Corner five is Josh Jobe. He's not where we want to be in terms of your corner depth. So getting McPherson the snaps is certainly nice. But Maddox playing well also puts you in a spot where if Slay does go down, you can have a conversation about, do we want to put Zach on the outside or do we want to put him in the slot? And do we have the ability to move Maddox to the outside? So it's a nice thing if he's really playing well in that contract. So he played well. Bradbury, really nice pass breakup on that one third down too. Bradbury was hitting. Chauncey was hitting. They were triggering downhill and stuff, playing a lot more aggressive in the zones than you were used to last year. So secondary, that's good. We talked about the pass rush, linebackers. TJ Edwards misread a play at one point and gave up a 6 yard gain, but whatever, I'm over it.
I thought he played well over. You know what he's done really well is like in the, you're mentioning the one play, but when he is running to the flat and has like a one-on-one in space tackle against the running back the last 2 weeks, he's made those more than I feel like I've seen him in the past. So I would get, and also when they do blitz him, he's got a little juice to him as a blitzer. He's going to be physical. And if he gets matched up against the running back, he's going to have some success. So I know we have listeners who get mad when you criticize TJ Edwards.
Oh, do we? Sure. Do they just at you and not me?
I mean, I'm just assuming. I know they get mad at you for Marcus Sapp. So I assume the TJ Edwards.
Listen, TJ loves flying to the flats and making a tackle so much that he did it on a play where he was not supposed to, and then he had a big chunk run up the middle because he wasn't there. No, TJ's good. TJ's a fine player. He's a limited player for you. But when they go those five down fronts, they go 5-1-5. He's the only linebacker on the field. They put a lot on his plate. So credit where credit is due. They ask him to do more than a lot of defenses ask their linebackers to do.
Where do you think the Eagles rank? I mean, you might have an educated guess on this, among NFC teams in Super Bowl odds right now. This is to win the Super Bowl.
You said NFC or NFL?
NFC. Well, NFC, you can give me both if you want.
NFC, they're going to be tied for first.
They are second behind the Bucks.
Bucks?
Yeah, Bucks are still first.
People watching the Bucks? People aware of the health situation in Tampa?
Bucks are plus 700 to win the Super Bowl. Eagles are plus 950. They have better odds than the Packers, the Rams, the Niners. Yeah, just as everybody suspected, you know. The only teams ahead of them, Bills, Bucks, and the Chiefs, league-wide, only teams with better odds to win the freaking Super Bowl than your
else, man.
Philadelphia
I'll
Eagles.
Tell you, I'm so excited for this week because last week I said, have you done it? Have you done the peek ahead? Eagles going to be 6-0 heading into the bye.
Yeah.
The more I watched, after I said that, I watched the Jaguars game against the Colts on like the All-22, and then I watched the Jaguars game against the Chargers. This Jaguars team, not to sneeze at, brother. Oh, they can play. This is the best team the Eagles will play through four quarters, or through four games of the season, excuse me. Are we positive the Jaguars are like a good, good team? No. But this is absolutely, definitely the best team the Eagles will have played through four games. So big, big, big heat check moment, especially like the offense looks great, but has been scoring in spurts. It kind of lets
Like, see what happens when they get their nose bloodied a little. Let's see what happens when they have to play from behind, which they haven't done at all this season. Like, the Jaguars are going to punch the Eagles in the mouth a little bit. At the very least, they're going to give them more resistance than they've experienced, especially when the Eagles hold the ball. That's going to be a very big deal to, like, testing the mettle of this team, right? Like, chips are going to get down a little bit, and that's going to be very, very exciting. This defense in Jacksonville can play. I'm really pumped to preview this week and then get into that game. It's going to be a cool litmus test.
It's going to be fun. Yeah, just watching it live. I don't think the Jaguars are going to win the Super Bowl, but man, there are parallels early on between the 2017 Eagles and this Jaguars team when you just watch them. I mean, I don't know, Doug, maybe the year off was good for Doug, because today he was cooking Brandon Staley. I mean, they had answers for everything. They were moving up and down the field, 25 first downs, 413 yards. And I'm telling you, every week this season, they have left plays on the field. Like, Trevor Lawrence has made some spectacular plays. He's made some really high degree of difficulty plays. He's missed some easier plays. And it's not just Lawrence. Agnew, I think, had a drop last week. Etienne had a drop in week one. Like, any numbers you hear this week, not only are they legit, they could be better, in my opinion. And so it was funny. Doug just had a screen call today. I think it was like a third down where I was just like, this is the 2017 Eagles. I mean, he knew exactly when to call it. And they're really executing at a very high level. Like, just the little stuff, the wide receiver screens, the running back screens, those types of things where you're like, all right, you can kind of tell like a crisp offense from a bad offense with those types of plays. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they should look easy. Yeah.
Right. And then they'll get into a third and goal, which they had a lot of, like the Eagles, first and goal, no good. Second and goal, no good. They get to third and goal, no good. They get to a third and goal, and there's just a 6'5" athlete with a laser beam dotting up tight window throws in the red zone. It goes, man, that looks really freaking familiar. There is a lot about the 2022 Jaguars that looks like the 2017 Eagles in terms of offensive execution and aesthetics. And it's just, it's very Twilight Zone-y. It's super fun.
How about defense too? Their D-line is dominating early in the season. That is another one. I'm watching it going, oh my gosh, look at them. They're just, I know the Chargers were banged up and down some offensive linemen, but they absolutely controlled that game from start to finish. I see Doug Peterson hugging Josh Allen, the other Josh Allen, at the end of the game on the sideline. Yeah, there are
weird parallels. This is the problem. You give two NFL writers an Eagles pod, and we're just like, yo, these Jags, baby, this is going to be fun.
I know. Eagles, we should save this for the Ringer NFL show.
Stay on message here? Yeah, yeah.
All right. Did you see the clip of Hassan Reddick in the locker room and Nick Sirianni walking by?
No, I missed this.
Reddick was just being interviewed, and I guess Sirianni was asked about Reddick last week and said he thinks he was close to like having a big game. And so Sirianni walks by. Sirianni, by the way, is wearing like a Mike Quick jersey that it looks
Sirianni
like
Sirianni is the king of pandering, man.
Like,
he's
TJ
wearing
Maxx
an Avante Maddox interception shirt that gets featured on the broadcast. Yeah. Why are you wearing a Mike Quick jersey, Nick? Because he averaged 19 yards per reception against Washington. It's such like, you have to like, it can't be something you have to Google to then wear the old guy's jersey against the team. It's got to be like so memorable. You know what I mean? Like, wear a Foles jersey on Patriots week, right? Like something like that, right? Wear like a Dawkins jersey on Packers week. So you got to like, it's got to be a thing as opposed to just freaking like, oh yeah, yeah. You didn't know that Mike Quick averaged over 19 yards a catch against Washington. Sirianni is trying so hard to be from here and isn't at all, but it's awesome.
Anytime you give Mike Quick some pop, that's good in my book, because Mike Quick is the man and he deserves it for sure. But yeah, Sirianni just walked by and just yelled at the reporters in Reddick, I told you he was close to blowing up Temple. And then he just kept walking. And it's Mike Quick.
Exactly. The Temple is just, he's trying.
He just yells Temple.
He's absolutely trying too hard. But Philly is the sort of place where you can try so evidently hard and it works.
Especially if you're
3-0.
Yeah, especially if you're
3-0.
Special teams. This was in my notes here. What was going on there? Devontae Smith back there returning a punt, the one punt. And then Britton Covey is not going to have a long NFL career. Mark Schlereth was like, that was his favorite part of calling this game, was the hits that Covey was taking. Were you surprised at Devontae being back there? You seem to think that it's no big deal.
No, I can't recall. Did Covey have a muff against the Vikings, or am I misremembering?
Well, Covey had a muff today, right?
I know he had a muff today. Yeah. I'm not sure if I'm.
I can't remember either.
Yeah, so there's a chance it's a little bit of that, right? It's a little bit of classic special teams. Like, if you drop one, we're going to put the other guy out there. I don't think Devontae should be returning punts. And I also go turn on some Britton Covey Utah film. Covey loves him some contact. He's just a little psycho.
Okay.
And so that doesn't surprise me at all.
He embraces it.
I'm
not going to be doing that, by the way. I'm not going to be turning on any
Covey Utah film.
Yeah.
You brought back Birds with Friends classic and Garbanzo Beans. So I'll bring back a Bleeding Green Nation classic. And on special teams, I'll just say Jake Elliott has never missed a kick in his life. Never. Elliott has never missed a kick once and never will.
I know nothing about only thing I know about special teams is if a guy's dropping a punt or if a guy's doing what Jordan Davis did today. Those I know are not good things.
I couldn't even tell you who the Eagles punter is the way they've been playing on offense, baby.
Aaron Sipos. There you go. All right. Last thing was I had here was injuries. Yeah, Slay, I guess he told reporters, I think I saw Jeff McLean say that Slay said he was just cramping up, but I mean, he was on TV on the sideline, like holding his lower back at the end of that game and was coming in and out. So that's something to keep an eye on. Dallas Goedert was in and out of this game. Hassan Reddick was in and out of this game. Yep. Lyndon Dickerson was in and out of this game. So they've had good injury luck so far. Let's see what these guys, what the injury report looks like on Wednesday, but otherwise it's a... another win, just a ho-hum 24-8 win that you can turn off in the third quarter and go about your fall activities. So Eagles are 3-0. Benny Souls, anything else to finish with here? Or should I close us out?
I definitely earlier in the week, I had a home life thing where I was like, how do I feel about this?
Your poison ivy's looking good. I don't even see it anymore. Is it gone?
Yeah. No, poison ivy's doing good. We're going back to doing yard work. We're getting back, you know, you just got to get back to the jugs machine, start catching passes. I get back in the yard, start doing yard work again. Just got to get through it.
Okay.
Having a hot water heater installed. Excited about that. Having had hot water in the last few days. Painting our master bedrooms.
Painting it?
Yes.
Oh, you know how to paint a room, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, I have no idea.
I hope so.
I once did it in high school. I helped paint the senior lounge. It's kind of fun. You take the roller things out and you just go up and down. I mean, I thought it was pretty easy, but I'm not going to be doing that in my own house.
No, we currently have confidence that it will turn out okay. Maybe that's misplaced confidence. Maybe it's the confidence of youth and naivety, but we'll only find out once we're done painting, I guess. It's all like primed and sanded and ready to go, so...
Yeah, see, I don't even know what that means, so that's good. Primed and sanded, yeah, of course. Well, this is good information, because now if we have something to wager on during the season, if you lose, I could say, all right, if you lose, you have to come and, like, paint a room in my house or something.
We wagering me heading back to the East Coast to paint?
You still have family. Come on, you're family. You make a trip, right?
No? I make bets at the hoagie level. I go up to hoagie placement. Well, I wager Wawa 12 inches, and that's it.
I guess that's fair. We're still early on in our relationship. Maybe I'll wait till year two to have you come and paint the house if like TJ Edwards has 15 tackles or something. All right. We'll wait on that. If you have suggestions on what Ben and I should wager this season, we're going to disagree on some stuff, especially, you know, once they lose a game or two, I think that's when we'll disagree more. Now we're just like, man, this is crazy. They're just dominating their opponents. So if you have suggestions for stuff we should wager, knowing our respective backgrounds, what we're good at, what we're bad at, all those things, certainly let us know. All right. Remember to rate. We're getting nice ratings, nice reviews. Don't be left out there. You know, you got to jump in there and join the ratings and the reviews. Tell your friends about us if you're enjoying the podcast. Grab your kids' phones. Just download the episodes. They won't know anything. Let's juice the numbers a little bit. We will be back Thursday with a film breakdown of this game and a look ahead. I think we'll have to get into that matchup quite a bit. The Jaguars are going to be a very buzzy team this week. The Eagles are already a buzzy team. So we will go deep into that matchup on Thursday. Thank you to everyone for listening to the Ringers Philly Special.